I am Rahime Mahmood. I am singer. I'm human rights activist. Currently, I am project director of the World Uyghur Congress, also advisor to the Interparliamentarian Alliance on China.
How many Uyghur people are there?
The population in the Chinese census is about 11.7 million within the region. But we have about 1 million living abroad in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and in Turkey. But they're very, very small population in Europe. For example, in the UK, perhaps about 500, including children, and you're born here.
Okay, so what is the origin of the Uyghur people?
Uyghurs are Turkic. So if you know Uzbek people, we believe we are cousins. The language is very similar to Uzbek and the Turkish. I didn't need to study Turkish. I could communicate with Turkish people. And culturally, also very similar to, it's more Central Asian and Turkic culture. Religion is Islam, Sunni, similar to the Turkish. You must know the Islam is so widespread, and the practice is slightly different from place to place. So Uyghur Muslims are far more closer to the Turkish origin. So the culturally Uyghurs, we are much closer to Istanbul than Beijing.
What about geographically, though?
Geographically, we are in the heart of the old Silk Road. It's in the Central Asia. Central Asia, the Uyghur region, or I call it East Turkestan. You geographically, if you look at it, it's the mainland China and East Turkestan. You have the long Gobi Desert. Have to travel through Gobi Desert, then you reach the oasis town of Kumul, and that's where the region start. And in the south, it's bordered with India, Pakistan, Afghanistan. That's the southern part. In the north, where I come from, where closest border is Kazakhstan, and closest city is Almaty to the to Volga region.
Can you tell me, have the Uyghur people really ever controlled their own destiny? Because in Central Asia, many of the traditional groups of people have been either controlled by one empire or another.
Well, yes. If you look at the Uyghur history, Uyghur Empire was in during the 8th century. But then again, I'm not going to go into the long history. I'm not a historian. The Qing Dynasty, not nowadays Chinese CCP government, but during the Qing Manchuria time, they invaded the East Turkestan. In 1959, and dominated it until 1864, and during that time, the territory was renamed as Xinjiang, and Xinjiang means new frontier or new border. Although Chinese government often claim that Xinjiang historically was part of China, Xinjiang never been independent. Then Qin invasion in Jungwaria, the historians estimated that 1 million people were slaughtered during that time. And the latest two independence that Uyghurs declared was in 1944, very short-lived independence. Then 1933 and 1944. And before the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party occupied in 1949. And then in 1955, it was renamed as Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. At the time, the CCP was very worried that the Uyghurs will would reclaim independence again, and therefore the agreement was giving the region the full autonomy rights. So under the Chinese CCP constitution, Xinjiang is an Uyghur autonomy, and Uyghur people has full self-determination rights. But that has never been honored. From the 1958, the rightist movement started throughout China, and who suffered the most? The people in Tibet, the Uyghurs in East Turkestan, and many other ethnic groups. And during the Cultural Revolution, again, because of the distinct culture, religion, Uyghurs suffered most losses. We had a brief freedom. I would say that was a happy time from the early 80s after Mao died. The new leadership branded Cultural Revolution as a mistake. And so during the 80s, the agreement of freedom of religion, culture was implemented. And during that time, the mosques reopened, the culture, Uyghur culture, language started to revive. And then in 1989, the student democratic movement and it ended with June 4th massacre. By the way, I was also one of the students who joined this student democratic movement. I left the square on the 2nd of June, and the massacre happened on the 4th of June. Thousands of Chinese students and some ethnic minority students were killed. And this was a turning point in China. The human rights situation started going back to the Cultural Revolution. And we're now seeing, especially since Xi Jinping took power, the new regulations and laws that implemented in my country since especially 2009, extrajudicial killing, extrajudicial arrest, that gradually took away the rights of the Uyghurs.
Now, I know you're quite familiar with the situation over there. Can you tell me what day-to-day life is now like in Xinjiang?
Well, at the moment, obviously, I didn't return to my country since I left in 2000. But through my work as an interpreter, translator, working with reporters, interviewing the people who some fled the region, some was released because of their being foreign nationals. And we know since 2009, the region was turned into a police state. At the moment, after I spoke to one of the survivors, Qalb Nur Siddiq, who is now living in Holland, and she left in 2019. She taught in two different camps, one male camp and one female concentration camps. And she said that there is not much difference when you compare the freedom, whether you are inside camp or outside, because there are checkpoints within 200 meters. And even when you walk into your own community, a neighborhood, there are checkpoints that you have to use your ID card and facial recognition camera and cross and walk into the house. Walk into your own neighborhood, and including your own house, they have for the Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities had this barcode. So the barcode is connected to the police, a system called Integrated Joint Platform Operation. And what it does is to collect every movement of the Uyghurs, because every 200 meter, you have to swipe your card. There are cameras picking your movement, the data, and the whole data is connected to this vast joint platform, integrated joint platform, and computerized the collection of data. It analyzes your movement and then select after the analyzing this movement, computer automatically select names of the people being dangerous, being suspicious, or being normal. And so red, yellow, and green
okay,
color.
Okay, so how do they decide who's red, yellow, and green, and what does it mean for the people living there?
It is impossible for people to know how it was decided, but the computer has its own way of collecting all the data. And this system, the implementing this system, is to arrest as many people as possible. We have spoken to one IT intellectual who left in 2019, early 2019, when we were making this documentary Undercover Inside China's Digital Gulag. And he gave us very detailed information about how this surveillance, automatic surveillance computer system was set up. For example, he said, if you go to a hotel and stay overnight, and if one person in that hotel who stayed in there, who was suspicious because he had a history of being imprisoned in the past, and everyone who stayed in that hotel that night, that would be linked, automatically linked to that person, and you became from normal to suspicious.
Well, how many people are living under this system?
Entire population living under this system, according to the Chinese population census. Uyghurs are about 11.7 or 12 million Uyghurs.
But surely that's people in the cities, not in the countryside.
No, this system is implemented throughout everywhere, not only just city, everywhere. And this woman that I mentioned, Tursunay Ziyavuddin, who lived in Kunas. Kunas is a beautiful mountainous region where mostly nomadic people live. And in this, even now, these surveillance cameras are installed in the mountains and hills and everywhere.
Now, the Chinese government say that they believe that Xinjiang is a hotbed of potential terrorism. They're worried that the people there are going to rise up against the Chinese government. So that's why they're implementing these measures.
Yes, that is the Chinese version of their excuses of interning up to 3 million Uyghurs and other minorities. Yes, there have been conflicts, and there have been very unpleasant incidents, but the Chinese government, since occupied the region from 1949, one disaster after another disasters. Uyghurs were marginalized, were badly discriminated, and the job opportunities, business opportunities, we don't have the same rights as the Han Chinese, especially in recent years, from the 80s, this mass immigration started encouraging the Chinese people to move to East Turkestan and populate the area. They were prioritized in housing, in giving them loans to set up businesses, and also Han Chinese students, as soon as they finish university, they come to my region, they find a job. The job is there ready for them. I myself graduated from one of the top 10 universities in the in Chinese mainland China, Dalian University of Technology, with a degree of petrochemical engineering. I couldn't find a job in the capital of Urumqi in 1992. In the end, I had to take a job available in an ethylene plant in Dushanzi, in a petrochemical town. This is the root cause of these conflicts most of the time, because Uyghurs didn't feel they are treated fairly. We became the stranger in our own ancestral land. And of course, I disagree with any violence, because whatever violence happens, then who suffer most is the people, is the Uyghurs. If you go and kill 10 Chinese, you ended up having losing 10,000 people into prisons. And sadly, now China, even if claim there is a terrorist attacks or whatever, but they cannot justify interning 3 million Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims into these torture camps.
The Chinese will say, the Chinese government will say that it's because of these problems that they're having to re-educate people. And actually, they say the camps are really there just to explain to people that the Chinese are in charge, and also that they must swear allegiance to President Xi. He's in charge of the country, and that they must be loyal to him. And you can understand, an empire wants its subjects to be loyal to the leader.
Yes, that is a dictatorship regime. And they want Uyghurs give up their culture, their religion, their language. And from the survivors of these camps, and this is indoctrination facilities where Uyghurs as old as 80 years old forced to recite Xi Jinping's thoughts. It's a thought reform returned from during the Cultural Revolution. And if people couldn't recite those lines, the party lines, and they were tortured, they were killed, and the women are being raped and sterilized, forced abortion. And today there is a report about, during the last 2 years, the data showed 50% birth rate decrease. And China is committing genocide against the Uyghur people. And we know now over 1 million children removed from their own families and placed in these facilities, the so-called state-run boarding schools. But these are not boarding schools. These are the children's camps. They are not allowed to have any family members visit them. They're making them become Han Chinese. They are completely detached from who they are.
For those who are victims, I know there is one that you've been in touch with, a rape victim. Is it possible to actually get out?
She was released because her husband campaigned for her release. Her husband is Kazakh nationality, Kazakhstan, who holds Kazakh passport.
Okay, Kazakhstan, so what's her name?
Tursunay Ziyabedin. Her testimony. So she returned to visit her family with her husband in 2017. because she has been living in Kazakhstan for 5 years, and they returned once. They didn't have any problems. So the second time, they didn't think that they will encounter any problem, because she was working in her husband's clinic. Her husband is a doctor, as a nurse. And after she returned in 2017, and suddenly one day, when she was all walking in the street, police came in and arrested her. And she spent 2 months in this re-education school. At the time, she said things were not as bad. They were deprived from sleeping, food, but she didn't experience torture. But she felt very, very ill because of the food. She had a developed stomach ulcer, and she was released after 2 months. And then in 2018, and she was arrested again. Because when her husband left the country, the government said that you must return after 2 months back to the country. But husband didn't return. And then they said, because you also signed the agreement that you promised your husband would return within 2 months, but he didn't. Therefore, we have to detain you until your husband returned to the country. And she said the horror, so said horror started from the time I entered the gate. And we must pass through a checkpoint. They pulled out our earrings without care. And they herded us into a room in a hurry, as there were so many people. The scene is still clearly in front of my eyes, and said from 8th of March, a mass arrest started in Kaunas, which lasted 3 to 4 days. And when she arrived there on that day, she said there were four buses parked in a line. Police were ushering people nonstop. She entered the cell, and she said, I was with four or five other women. One of them was an elderly lady. I forgot to think about my own fear and the suffering, but I was watching her, how she was treated so roughly, and she was stripped to almost naked because they shouted at her, why did you wear long dress and wear headscarf? But culturally, traditionally, all our women, they wear long dress and wear headscarf. And so she said it was absolutely horrific after arriving in the cell. So at nights, after midnight, every evening, 3 to 4 men who wore masks and wore glasses, and they didn't wear police uniform, and they would come and pick the woman. And she said she didn't know at the time this rape was happening. She thought they were taken away for questioning. And she said in the cell, there are three, four CCTV cameras that monitor every movements. Despite living with 12, 13 women in this cell, they are not allowed to speak to one another. And she said even after she was tortured, after she was raped, she came back to the cell and said, just like any other woman, we would just lie quietly in the bed and just cry. We cannot share what happened to us because we know if we did tell someone in the cell, immediately we will be taken back and then be tortured or raped. And she mentioned about the pills, the injections, every week, and every other week they had these injections. And she said after had this injection, she developed a terrible skin problem. And she said it felt like insects were walking between the flesh and the bone, and couldn't bear it. And many women suffered heavy bleeding, and many women afterwards stopped their periods. And she said also after taking these pills and after forced injections, you completely become numb. And for days, you cannot remember even your own family members. And all you think is that when they can give me food, because you suffer from this hunger so terribly, and you only think about, I wish no one would come and take me out for questioning or torture. I just wish they can give me more food. And that is not just the one survivor, Gulzira Ziauddin, and Qalb Nur Siddiq, one of the camp teachers who left the region in 2019 after taught in two different camps, one male and one female. And she also revealed that everyone was chained and shackled when they came to the classes, and they were separated with there is a metal bar and glasses separated the teachers and the students. And she said everyone, all the females, their head was shaven. And most of these detainees, she learned that they were detained there because they studied abroad. And they visited abroad, had family members abroad, or had foreign apps like WhatsApp installed in their phones. And these were the crimes that they were taken to that women's camp.
Okay, Rahima, mm-hmm. what would you say to people who say, well, this is just US propaganda? The Americans hate the Chinese. They will come out with any story in order to make the Chinese look bad.
I would tell them to read the reports, for example, the latest Essex Court Chambers legal opinion, 105 pages of carefully analyzing all the reports, personal accounts, and satellite images, and the reports by the BBC, like John Sudworth's report of the forced labor from inside the region, and also the Dr. Adrian Zenz's report on sterilization and birth control, and read the testimonies of all these survivors, and also listen to the podcast like this, listen to the voices of people who are speaking the truth. And of course, China would say that this is all propaganda and we never did anything wrong. But you look back history, in 1989, they killed thousands of students. And you should look at, the tank man, this is a regime, is a brutal, it's not just suppressing the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, the Mongols, the suppressing the Chinese, their own people. Also read about the stories about Falun Gong people. And then you will draw your own conclusion whether the China's propaganda is correct or whether we are telling the truth.
Now, I mean, we've learned, haven't we, that Muslims in many parts of the world have been persecuted, particularly in the Middle East, like the Palestinians, for example. We've seen in Pakistan, particularly in East Pakistan, horrendous persecution in Afghanistan. What is it? Why is it, do you think, that so many Muslim countries and peoples seem to be under persecution, and I mean particularly bad in Xinjiang, almost like concentration camps reminiscent of the Jews in Nazi Germany.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is very, very sad. I'm not going to make much comments about other countries because I never lived there and I never studied their history. But I know that most of these countries that you have mentioned is a dictatorship regime, unlike Western countries, unlike UK. I mean, I can compare how different, the feeling of different life. I lived in my country, I worked there as teacher, and when I came to the UK and our people asked me, how do you feel? I said, I miss my home, but I feel in heaven because I can speak so freely. I don't need to worry about, what I say, what I not to say. But what is happening to my people is the regime, is the foreign regime, the CCP, and persecuting the Uyghurs for centuries. Not the CCP, I mean the Chinese, but CCPs, I would say, for decades, since 1949. But what is happening since 2017 is genocide, because CCP want to re-engineer the whole population. Either you choose to be assimilated to become Han, or you choose a long-term prison or death. And this is what is happening to the Uyghur people. Up to 3 million Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities are locked in these torture camps. And we know children separated. All this situation, there is no justification. There is no justification to separate millions of children from their own parents.
Okay, so what is President Xi afraid of?
President Xi wants to become the superpower of the world. He made himself to be the president for life. Uyghur region, it's different from the other regions. It's very similar to the Tibet situation, but again, it has its very unique geographical and also its wealth. East Turkestan, the Chinese, they say openly the resource of black and white gold. Black is the oil, petrochemical, and the natural gas. Taklamakan Desert is the second largest desert in the world, and they found a huge resource of natural gas and oil. And cotton industry, and the white gold means cotton. 84% of China's cotton come from the region. 20% of world cotton come from the region. And also because of very special geographic location and the One Belt, One Road, the China dream, which Xi Jinping believe, and that is the way that he can become the superpower on the world stage. And the people from the these concentration camps, all of them said this is a party line. And they said in 2035, China will become the world power. Every country will have to listen to China, will have to negotiate with China. And in 2050, there will be one universe and one China. And Xi Jinping consider the region being a troubled region. And because the stability is the most important for his One Belt, One Road dream. And don't forget, the One Belt, One Road start from East Turkestan, Kashgar, at the heart of the old Silk Road. And the Chinese Communist Party are paranoid. They're paranoid about the so-called independent movement and the terrorists or separatists. These are just an excuse in order to control, complete control over the region, over its resource, and over its people. Not only the people physically, also their thoughts, their language, that what they believe. That has to be the Chinese version, the CCP version. And that is what is happening.
So what do you think is the biggest hope for the Uyghur people now?
This is a heartbreaking question. I mean, I don't know if there is any immediate solution that, you know, liberate all those suffering in these concentration camps and even the people who are living in their own home and not feel safe. But the hope is, for me, is people. People in the world must wake up. The world promised never again, and it is happening again. But I could see hope from my own campaign when I compared 2 years ago and now, and the people who now understand what is happening, the numbers are increasing. And also, if you watch the parliament debates and the Uyghur issue and the Uyghur genocide is repeatedly debated in the parliament. And we know U.S., the Trump administration declared this as genocide. And only a few days ago, Canadian Parliament overwhelmingly voted 266 against zero, and what is happening in China, what the CCP doing against the Uyghur people are genocide and a crime against humanity. Today, another news from Dutch Parliament, a majority voted that the genocide is taking place. And in this country, we know there has not been really meaningful action, but there are voices from Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab. They're all calling this is unacceptable crimes. But in order for our government to do more, we need a grassroots campaign, more people to join the Stop Uyghur Genocide campaign. And I believe people's power. In the end, if the whole world, especially the democratic countries, unite together and against and punish China, and the CCP regime might change its attitude, and that they realize the policy against my people is wrong, and it is not going to make them become a superpower in the world, on the world stage.
It might be also. I mean, you've got a lot of resistance in places like Tibet. You obviously your own in Xinjiang. You've also got resistance going on in Hong Kong. Obviously, a lot of this is being driven underground. But I wonder, ultimately, can Beijing, can President Xi keep the whole of China down?
Well, you know, this regime is running the country, the entire China is iron fist and the military. Now this high technology, facial recognition cameras, it is turning the whole China, started from East Turkestan, the Uyghur region, they're gradually, applying this same system in throughout China. And you can see you don't hear any decent voices coming from China. Yes, Hong Kong movement, you look at it, Hong Kong last year and this year, they implemented the security law, and now a lot of all the protest organizers are imprisoned, and the world not really doing much to stop this. So in fact, I believe it has to be the people within China must oppose, you know, the regime. But I don't know how they can because of this extreme control, high-tech control and the people's control and this extreme punishment people face when they speak
right.
up
I mean,
against China.
The worry here is that as soon as people even think about resisting, that they're going to be in jail before they can even get organised. But look, there is some light at the end of the tunnel in that the BAFTA award-winning documentary last year, produced by ITV, Undercover Inside China's Digital Gulags, it's an exposure program, it won the award for the best current affairs documentary, and you were involved in that, I believe.
Yes, I worked as a consultant and interpreter translator. Yeah, it won many awards, and especially after BAFTA, Robin Banwell, the producer, wrote me a very emotional message. He said, "We won this at the back of the suffering of your people." And yeah, it also won Emmy and many other major awards. I know this is the recognition of, you know, what is happening is true, and especially the high tech control, which is new. I often say that if Holocaust is a industrial first industrial genocide, then we Uyghurs are facing the first high tech genocide.
Now, at that documentary, you can't get it for love nor money. You can't find it on the internet or on the ITV player. But I understand that there is another documentary which is basically the same thing, only a little bit more developed, which was released in the United States, which we can watch.
Yes, it is called Undercover China, and you can find on YouTube. Nothing much changed from the very first version, and the second version we updated. We updated because the first version was released in 2019, and then the second version was 2020. So we managed to interview the people who appeared in the original documentary, and asked them the development, whether they have managed to get hold of their families. And so we had the some new information added, updated in that the documentary. So you wouldn't be disappointed, although you that the original version is not available, but PBS version is almost the same. So I would really recommend people to watch that documentary. And the most success of that documentary is we managed to get a undercover reporter, cameraman, a Chinese person to go there, and he traveled the region, went all the way to Kashgar, and managed to speak to Chinese officials and two Chinese officials without knowing speaking to the undercover reporter. And he said, you know, Uyghurs don't have human rights. It's not about violating their human rights. They just don't have human rights. And another Chinese official while drinking beer in the bar, and he said, we need to build a lot of mental hospitals, because when these people released from these camps, they need to go to mental hospital there because not normal when they come out. They are not going to be normal. And this is all in that documentary.
Okay, so
and
look,
that is a CCP official telling the reporter without knowing that they were speaking.
That's right. The only way you're going to get information out with is with journalistic stings like that. Let's hope there's many, many more of them. But for people who are torture victims and rape victims right now, is there any hope of them escaping from that part of the world, coming to the West?
Almost impossible. It's almost impossible. We have about 10, nine at the moment that I know who were locked up in these camps and released. Each person's situation was very, very unique. For example, Mihrigul Tursun, she is now living in USA. She was released because her children's citizenship was Egyptian, because her husband was Egyptian, and they had to release her because of that. And Omar Bakali was a very first camp survivor, and who is Kazakhstan citizen, who was born and brought up in Uyghur region. And he was arrested when he went for a business trip, and he was released. Gulbahar Jalilova, again, she is a Kazakhstan citizen, and she was also arrested when she went for a business trip there. So she was locked up over 1 year in two, three different camps. And Qalbinur Siddiq, I mentioned, who is now living in Holland, and she has Uzbek ethnic certificate, and she complied with every request, including sterilization, in order to visit her daughter in Holland. And they allowed her to travel, but not her husband. The police said, because your husband is Uyghur, it's impossible. We cannot allow any Uyghur travel, and you can travel because you are Uzbek. And she didn't speak for 1 year. She kept silence from 2019 until last year. In the end, she said, I cannot hold this information any longer. It's killing me. And she came forward. And I can tell you each of these people who released because they had foreign connections, that's why they were released. But people who don't have any foreign connections, when they are, even after they were released from the camps, they are under surveillance. They cannot move.
It sounds like we need some pipelines to get people out, rather like the ones we had to get the RAF soldiers out of occupied Europe in the Second World War. Something similar. But anyway, look, this is absolutely fascinating, Rahima. Can you just give our listeners some idea of a good place to follow this, maybe to get news and also to support your campaign?
Thank you very much. Please follow Stop Uyghur Genocide Campaign. Also, we have call to action.
You better tell us how to spell Uyghur, because there seems to be several different spellings of it.
Yeah. Stop Uyghur Genocide. Uyghur spelled U-Y-G-H-U-R. So there are several campaigns that you can join. And also call to action, Stop Uyghur, Stop Forced Labor. There are about 300 organizations came together and formed this campaign. So call to action, Stop Uyghur.
Okay, so what's your campaign specifically?
My campaign, I have several campaigns now. First campaign now, it's a genocide amendment to the trade bill that is just passed the third round House of Lords. We are asking people to contact their MPs, vote for the genocide amendment to the trade bill. And this is the number one campaign that I am campaigning. And the second campaign, I would ask people to boycott any goods, any brands that is made from slave labor. So call to action campaign, I am involved. And also the genocide game, Beijing 2022. We've been writing to the sponsors like Airbnb to stop sponsoring the Olympic. And that's our first demand. And we say, if you don't, if you cannot, at least you should voice your concern and you should use your platform to speak about the Uyghur genocide. So you can also find the campaign, Genocide Campaign Beijing 2022, because we compare that to the Berlin 1935 Olympic. And also many things that you can do, raise awareness and organize any kind of events. You can reach out to me. You can follow me on Twitter and just retweet what I tweet. So update your knowledge about what is happening. And the women's campaign, Uyghur Women's Campaign, will be launched on the International Women's Day. And we need your support to campaign against Uyghur women, forced sterilization, forced birth control, and gang rape, and state-sponsored rape.
Rahima Mahmoud, thanks very much for joining us, and God bless.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.